All right, get ready, because we're diving into something that impacts all of us, right? Taxes. But we're not going to get bogged down with like forms and all that. Okay. We're going deeper, looking at like the big picture. What's the Constitution actually say about how the government can even tax us? We've got excerpts from this article called Constitutional Issues of Taxation to dig into. It gets into some pretty in-depth stuff. Direct versus indirect taxes, the whole 16th Amendment thing, and how all this actually impacts our lives. You ready?
Absolutely. I think this is one of those topics that often feels like shrouded in mystery, right? And it's hard to grasp, but understanding the constitutional framework can really shed light on how the whole system works.
Exactly. So let's start with like the foundation. What are the types of taxes the Constitution even allows? Like, what are we allowed to be taxed on?
So the Constitution is pretty specific here. It boils down to two main categories: direct taxes and indirect taxes. So think of it like two separate buckets the government can use to collect revenue.
Okay, two buckets. So what goes in each one? Let's start with direct taxes.
Okay, so direct taxes are those that are levied directly on individuals or their property. Historically, things like property taxes would fall under this category. And then those old school poll taxes. What's really interesting is that the Constitution has a very specific rule about direct taxes. They must be apportioned among the states based on population.
Apportioned.
So it's not just a flat rate for everyone.
Okay.
The idea was to prevent, like, bigger states, right, from wielding too much power when it came to taxation. So, for example, let's say the government needed to raise a certain amount of money through a direct tax. A state with double the population of another would have to shoulder twice the burden of that tax. So it was a way to ensure fairness and prevent smaller states from being unfairly targeted.
That makes sense. So it's kind of like a checks and balances system within the tax structure itself. That's pretty cool.
Now, on the flip side, we have indirect taxes. These are levied on goods or services rather than individuals directly.
So things like sales tax or that like extra cost you see on imported goods.
You got it. Import duties, excise taxes on things like alcohol or tobacco. Those are all classic examples of indirect taxes. The key distinction here is that unlike direct taxes, these can be avoided. You don't want to pay the import duty. Don't buy imported goods. It's all about individual
So
choice.
you're saying with indirect taxes, I have a say in whether or not I even engage in the thing that makes me be taxed?
Precisely.
Interesting.
But the Constitution still has some rules about these, right?
So what are the rules around indirect taxes?
So while direct taxes have to be apportioned based on population, indirect taxes must be uniform throughout the U.S. So everyone pays the same rate, regardless of what state they live in. It ensures fairness and prevents the government from, playing favorites.
Got it. So two buckets, direct taxes apportioned by population and indirect taxes, uniform rate across the board. But where does something like income tax fit into all of this? Because that seems kind of like a gray area, to me at least.
That's where things get really interesting, and where this article starts to unpack some pretty complex legal arguments. So the term income tax itself doesn't automatically place it in one category or the other. A law could be written to make it either a direct or an indirect tax and still call it an income tax.
So just calling something an income tax doesn't mean like we know what it is.
Not at all. We have to look deeper at how the law is structured and enforced to determine whether it falls under that direct or indirect umbrella. So historically, before the 16th Amendment came along, the Supreme Court generally viewed income tax as a direct tax. But the 16th Amendment muddied the waters a bit, and it's been a source of debate ever since.
Ah, yes, the 16th Amendment. That's one I think like everyone's heard of it, but I don't know if they fully understand it. And this article certainly doesn't shy away from controversy, calling it dastardly because of all the confusion it's caused.
It's definitely sparked a lot of debate and legal wrangling over the years. To understand the controversy, we have to go back to its origins. So the 16th Amendment was passed to overturn a Supreme Court ruling in the case of Pollock v. Farmers Loan and Trust Co. This ruling had placed limits on the government's ability to tax income from property. And the 16th Amendment aimed to address that.
So it was kind of like a power play by the government to expand their ability to tax.
You could definitely see it that way.
Okay.
But the core of the controversy lies in how the 16th Amendment has been interpreted and what it means for the government's ability to tax different types of income. So the big question is whether it allows the government to tax corporate profits as a direct tax without that whole apportionment requirement.
Okay.
Or whether it just confirms that it's an indirect tax, similar to an excise tax.
Okay, I think I'm starting to see why this is such a big deal. Because that distinction has some pretty major implications, right?
Absolutely. It all comes down to, you know, how much and what the government can tax.
Right, right.
If corporate profits are considered a direct tax, mm-hmm. then they would have to be divided up among the states based on population.
Okay.
Just like we talked about earlier.
Right, okay.
But if they're treated as an indirect tax, there's no such requirement.
Oh.
And this gives the government a much broader reach.
So the interpretation of the 16th Amendment is basically what determines how much the government can tax.
Exactly.
Wow. That's huge.
And that's why this seemingly obscure legal debate actually has a profound impact on all of us.
Right. Yeah. Wow. I'm already seeing taxes in like a whole new light. But let's get even more specific here. What types of income does the 16th Amendment even cover?
Right.
Is it just like a free-for-all, or are there actual limitations?
That's a great question, and that's where things get even more fascinating.
Okay.
According to the Supreme Court, the 16th Amendment doesn't just give the government, like, you know, carte blanche to tax any income it wants.
Okay, so there are some limitations.
Yes. The income referred to in the amendment has a very specific definition.
Okay.
And it all goes back to a law that was in place before the 16th Amendment was even ratified.
Okay.
The 1909 Corporate Tax Act.
Hold on. So we're looking back over a century ago.
Mm-hmm.
Got a law
to understand how taxes work today.
It might sound strange.
Yeah.
But that's how the Supreme Court has interpreted the 16th Amendment. They've ruled that the definition of income under the amendment has to be the same definition used in that 1909 law.
Wow. Okay. So what does that mean for us in the here and now? It means that the income the 16th Amendment allows the government to tax is directly tied to profits from corporate activities.
So not just any income. It's specifically, like, related to corporations.
Exactly. We're talking about things like dividends paid to shareholders, patronage dividends from cooperatives, and interest earned from corporate investments.
Okay.
That's what falls into the umbrella of the 16th Amendment.
Okay, that's a lot narrower than I think most people would probably assume.
Right.
Yeah. So if I'm just, like, earning a living through, like, my own, like, you know, personal endeavors, not through some big corporation or anything.
Right.
Does that mean, like, the federal government can't touch my earnings?
Now, that's a question that leads us into some really interesting legal territory.
Okay.
And it's where the article really starts to challenge conventional thinking about taxation. It highlights this crucial distinction between what the law considers business versus private affairs.
Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me more about this business versus private affairs idea.
Okay, so in a legal sense, business typically refers to the activities of corporations or other entities created by the state.
Uh-huh.
And these are subject to, you know, various taxes and regulations.
Right.
However, if you're earning a living through private activities that aren't regulated in the same way, the article argues that it doesn't necessarily fall under that business definition.
So, like, someone who's a freelance writer working from home, or an artist who's, you know, selling their own creations.
Right.
Would that be considered private affairs then?
That's the argument the article's making.
Okay.
And because it falls outside that business definition, it might not be subject to direct taxation by the federal government.
Wow. That's a pretty big distinction. It kind of sounds like there's like a loophole here for people who are, you know, working outside of those traditional structures.
It's certainly a thought-provoking concept.
Yeah.
But of course, there's always a catch.
There's always a catch, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the catch?
The catch is this voluntary aspect of taxation.
Okay.
You know, the idea that you can choose whether to engage in activities that trigger tax liability.
Right.
It only applies if you steer clear of those specific activities.
So you can choose to kind of like stay off the government's radar, but once you step into certain arenas, you're in the game.
Precisely.
Okay.
It's like deciding to play a particular game. You're free to opt out, but once you choose to play, you have to abide by the rules.
So, like, choosing to, you know, incorporate your business, or choosing to invest in, you know, corporate stocks, that would put you in the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're voluntarily engaging in activities that the government has defined as taxable.
This is all incredibly nuanced. It really makes you think about the choices we make,
right,
and how they impact like our relationship to taxes even.
Absolutely. And it highlights the importance of understanding these legal distinctions.
Yeah.
What seems like an obscure legal debate can actually have real-world consequences for your own finances.
Right. All right, before we move on, there's one more kind of wrinkle the article brings up that I found really fascinating.
Okay.
It's this idea that even an indirect tax can potentially be turned into a direct tax based on how it's enforced.
Yes. That's a crucial point.
Yeah.
It all goes back to that key element of excise taxes, that they have to be avoidable. You have a choice to not engage in the activity and therefore avoid the tax.
Right. Like choosing not to buy imported goods to avoid that duty.
Exactly.
But the article argues that if the enforcement of the tax makes it essentially unavoidable, even if you haven't done anything to like, you know, trigger the tax, then it starts to function more like a direct tax.
Exactly.
And if a tax is like operating as a direct tax, then according to the Constitution, it would have to be apportioned to even be considered valid.
Right.
Wow, that really makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
What if, like, the way our current income tax system is even enforced actually goes against those fundamental constitutional principles? That's kind of mind-blowing.
It definitely raises some important questions about how our tax system operates.
Yeah.
And whether it's truly aligned with that framework laid out in the Constitution.
Well, we've certainly covered a lot of ground already, and it feels like we're just scratching the surface of this complex topic.
Yeah.
We'll delve deeper into like the implications of all this after a quick break.
Sounds good. Welcome back to our deep dive into the world of constitutional taxation. It's pretty fascinating stuff, wouldn't you say?
It is. And you know, before the break we were discussing how like just the way a tax is enforced can really change things.
Right.
Even potentially, like raising questions about the constitutionality of our income tax system. It's a lot to think about.
It is. It really is. And this article really makes that point that how the IRS operates can sometimes seem, you know, a little at odds with what the Constitution actually lays out.
It really makes you wonder, like, how many people are paying taxes that maybe they don't even owe because they don't get these like finer legal points.
Right. And that's why it's so important to educate ourselves about our rights and responsibilities as taxpayers, right?
Yeah.
The more we know about how the system works, the better we can navigate it.
Exactly. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to something as impactful as taxes. Now, we've spent a lot of time talking about what the government can tax.
Right.
But what about the things they can't tax? Like, what does the Constitution protect us from in terms of taxation?
Yeah, that's another crucial part of this whole discussion. The article draws a really clear line between what it calls, you know, business activities, which are typically associated with, you know, corporations, versus, you know, what it calls private affairs. And remember that idea of voluntary taxation that we talked about earlier?
Yeah, where you can kind of choose whether or not you engage in the activities.
Exactly.
That gets you taxed.
That's where it comes into play.
So how does this whole like business versus private affairs concept factor into that?
So business in this legal context generally refers to activities conducted by corporations or other entities that are created by the state.
Okay.
And those are subject to all sorts of taxes and regulations. However, if you're earning a living through like private activities, you know, things that aren't regulated in the same way, the article argues that this isn't necessarily considered business in the eyes of the law.
So if I'm like a freelance writer working from home or an artist who's selling their paintings directly to collectors,
right,
that wouldn't necessarily be like a business.
That's the argument the article's making. And because it doesn't fit that business definition, it might fall outside the scope of what the federal government can directly tax.
Wow. So it kind of challenges the conventional wisdom that any income you earn is like, you know, fair game for the tax man.
Exactly. But it's important to remember this doesn't mean you can just declare yourself exempt from all taxes.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
There are still activities that will trigger tax liabilities, even if you're not, you know, operating within that traditional corporate structure.
Right. So it's not a free pass. It's more about understanding the rules and making like, you know, strategic choices.
Exactly. It's about taking control of your financial life.
Yeah.
And your relationship with the tax system.
Now, I imagine some listeners might be thinking like, okay, this all sounds a little too good to be true.
Right.
Like there have to be limits to this voluntary taxation thing.
You're right to be skeptical. The article acknowledges that, you know, there are limits to this idea.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you're, you know, employed by the federal government, mm-hmm. you're going to be subject to taxes on your income. Mm. If you're dealing with certain, you know, regulated goods like alcohol or tobacco, there's going to be excise taxes involved. Mm. Certain sections of the Internal Revenue Code also outline, you know, specific activities that come with tax obligations.
Okay, so it's not like a blanket exemption. The key is to really know, like, the rules of the game.
Exactly. It's about being an informed and empowered citizen, not just, you know, blindly accepting whatever tax burden is placed upon you.
Right. This whole concept of voluntary taxation really, really is interesting because it really, like, challenges how most people view taxes.
Yeah.
It's not just about, like, grudgingly, you know, handing over your money. It's about understanding your rights and making choices that fit with, you know, your own goals and your principles even.
It's an empowering perspective, right? It puts the focus on individual agency and understanding the system rather than just, like, being a passive participant in it.
Now, before we wrap things up, I want to circle back to a point the article made that I thought was particularly, like, thought-provoking.
Okay.
This argument that the way that the IRS currently enforces the income tax might actually be unconstitutional.
Ah, yes. That's a bold claim and one that has sparked a lot of debate.
Right. But the article, like, backs it up with some interesting legal reasoning. It argues that if the demand for payment becomes essentially unavoidable,
mm-hmm.
even if you haven't engaged in any of the specific activities that trigger the tax, then it's essentially functioning as a direct tax.
Right.
And as we discussed earlier, any direct tax has to be apportioned among the states, you know, based on population.
Exactly.
So if the IRS is like demanding payment from people who haven't actually earned, you know, what the 16th Amendment defines as income,
mm.
and they're not doing these other, you know, excise taxable activities, the argument is that actually violates the Constitution.
It's a complex argument, and it hinges on some very specific legal interpretations.
Yeah.
But it does raise some important questions about whether the system that we've all come to accept is actually, like, you know, operating the way it's supposed to.
It really challenges us to think critically about these systems that we often just take for granted. You know,
right.
We assume that they're fair and just, but what if they're not? What if, like, our whole understanding is flawed?
That's the power of critical thinking, isn't it? You know, questioning assumptions, digging deeper, you know, seeking out knowledge to form your own informed opinions.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
We have.
But it's clear that there's much more to explore when it comes to this whole, like, world of constitutional taxation.
Oh, yeah. We've just scratched the surface. But hopefully this conversation has, you know, sparked your curiosity,
yeah.
and maybe inspired you to learn a little more about your own rights and responsibilities as a taxpayer.
Absolutely. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this episode with some final thoughts and takeaways. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Whew, it feels like we just, like, ran a mental marathon or something.
It has been quite a journey.
All these complexities of constitutional taxation.
We covered a lot of ground, that's for sure. You know, starting from those fundamental categories, direct and indirect taxes, to that whole controversy around the 16th Amendment. And even, you know, the idea that how the IRS operates might be bumping up against those constitutional limits.
It's a lot. Like, I feel like I almost need a flowchart to keep track of it all.
Right.
But I think what really strikes me is how much power we actually have as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just about blindly following the rules. It's about understanding them,
yeah.
and using that knowledge to make informed choices.
Exactly. And that's what this article really emphasizes. It's not about finding, you know, loopholes or evading taxes. It's about empowerment.
Yeah.
It's about understanding your rights and responsibilities as a taxpayer and engaging with the system from a place of knowledge, not just, you know, blind acceptance.
So let's try to like distill all this information down into some key takeaways for our listeners. Like,
mm-hmm.
what are the big things you think people should walk away with from this deep dive?
Okay. I'd say there are a few. First, you know, remember that the Constitution is really specific about what kinds of taxes the government can levy. It all comes back to those two categories, right? Direct and indirect taxes.
Right.
And each type has its own set of rules and limitations. Second, the 16th Amendment, despite all the confusion surrounding it, You know, it doesn't give the government unlimited power to just tax anything and everything. That income that it refers to, it's tied to profits from corporate activities.
Mm.
It's not just any income you might earn.
Right. Understanding that distinction is so important. And I think another key point is that how we structure our own activities, you know, whether we choose to operate within that traditional business framework or not,
right,
can have a big impact on how much we owe in taxes.
Absolutely. That business versus private affairs distinction is key. And finally, you know, I think the article's most thought-provoking takeaway, really, is that the way a tax is enforced can actually change its very nature. If an indirect tax becomes, like, unavoidable, even if you haven't done the thing that's supposed to trigger it, you know, it might be functioning as a direct tax in practice.
Right.
And that raises some serious constitutional questions.
Yeah, it really does. It challenges us to look beyond the surface, really scrutinize how these systems work.
Right.
It's all about being, you know, informed and engaged citizens.
Exactly. Understanding the Constitution, knowing your rights, and holding our government accountable. That's the foundation of a healthy democracy.
So what do we do now? Like, where do we go from here with all this knowledge?
Well, like we said, this is really just the tip of the iceberg, but it's a starting point. You know, I encourage everyone to dig a little deeper, explore the sources that we've talked about, and think about how they apply to your own life. You know, what kind of income do you earn? What activities are you engaged in? Understanding your own unique situation, that's the first step towards making informed choices about your relationship with the tax system.
That's great advice. And remember, you know, this isn't about gaming the system or trying to, you know, avoid paying your fair share.
Right.
It's about, you know, making sure the rules are being applied fairly and within those constitutional bounds.
It's about empowering ourselves as citizens.
Yeah.
And creating a system that works for everyone.
Well, we've reached the end of our deep dive. But, you know, the conversation doesn't have to end here. Keep those brain gears turning. And remember, knowledge is power.